Hi, I'm Scott Simon. Up First is here for you to help you stay on top of what's happening in the world, keep you informed in a way that's reliable, quick, and easy. Now it's your turn to be there for Up First. It's made possible by your NPR member station, so we're asking you to please support them before this year ends. It's fast and easy. Just go to donate.npr.org/upfirst, and thank you. Donald Trump's been impeached by the House. A Senate trial awaits.
But leader Mitch McConnell says the timeline for it is still unclear.
We remain at an impasse on these logistics.
I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Also, Russia and China vetoed critical aid to Syria. That puts millions of people at risk of starvation and death. Is there time to act?
And today may be one of the biggest shopping days of the year.
Americans say they're willing to pay more for sustainable, ethical products like
pet beds that are hand-felted and made from all-organic and all-natural wool in Kathmandu, Nepal.
But are these products really any better for the planet?
Oh, stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
This week, a leaner group of Democrats met to debate.
And they did so almost 24 hours to the minute after President Donald Trump was impeached by the House of Representatives. A tale of two parties or one election. NPR's Tamara Keith joins us. Tam, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you.
It's just the third time in U.S. history a president has been impeached. But then when the Democrats got on stage, they mostly seemed to be there to jump on Mayor Pete in his wine cave.
That is right. Mayor Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is leading in some early state polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. And when you have a lead in those important states, guess what? Some of the other candidates are going to come after you. So this was the PBS NewsHour Politico debate. And Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren went after him for holding big dollar fundraisers, including one in, as you mentioned, a wine cave, which is a very memorable phrase. And then Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar took digs at him about his relative lack of experience. But one of the sharpest barbs came in the midst of an exchange about electability.
If you want to talk about the capacity to win, try putting together a coalition to bring you back to office with 80% of the vote as a gay dude in Mike Pence's Indiana.
If you had won in Indiana, that would be one thing. You tried and you lost by 20 points.
She's pointing back to his race for state treasurer in Indiana in 2010, which he did not do well in. You know, when a race has electability as a major issue, and this race certainly does. If you talk to Democrats again and again, they say, you know, the most important thing to me is just beating Donald Trump. Well, if electability is the most important thing, then you're going to have this dynamic that's existed in this Democratic race where a candidate rises up, but it's sort of like an escalator to nowhere, because once they get to the top, all the other candidates start coming after them, and suddenly they stop looking quite so electable, and then someone else goes up the escalator to the top.
Did they have much variance of views on impeachment?
No. I mean, it was the first question in the debate, and they dispensed with it pretty quickly because, well, they all agree they want President Trump out of office, whether through impeachment or by winning, by a Democrat winning in November.
And of course, with just a couple of exceptions, the vote on impeachment of the House was strictly by party lines. No Republican defections. After this week, can it be said that the party of Lincoln, Eisenhower, and Reagan, party of balanced budgets and national security, has become the party of Donald Trump?
Oh, absolutely, without question. President Trump kept his Republicans in the House completely in line. You know, early on, there had been some Republican congresspeople expressing concerns or you know, being distressed about the president's call with President Zelensky. By the time that vote happened, he had all the Republicans in line, and the only defections were on the Democratic side, just a couple, a handful of them. And one of those ended up jumping parties after the vote and becoming a Republican. But it's not just that vote. You have the USMCA, the replacement for NAFTA, which passed out of the House on a very strong bipartisan vote. It had a lot of things in it that Democrats liked and some things that Republicans would have maybe not have wanted, But guess what? They voted for it, and it's a huge win for President Trump. And even things like paid parental leave in the defense bill for federal employees, that has not been a top Republican priority, but there they were, Republicans falling in line and supporting this priority that was a priority of President Trump.
Back to the debate, Amy Klobuchar and Andrew Yang seem to have impressed many in this week's debate. Could they get at least a lift on the escalator up you mentioned?
They are certainly getting a look. People are noticing them. Andrew Yang had a stronger performance in this last debate than he has had in past debates. It sort of strayed a little bit from his main talking points and showed a little bit more about what he stands for. And Senator Amy Klobuchar got almost as much speaking time as Bernie Sanders. They were quite nearly tied for the most speaking time in that debate.
Not a single vote's been cast, but at the same time, the polls seem to keep suggesting this has become a Biden-Sanders-Warren race. Is that true? Do the debates change anything?
It's not clear that the debates have really changed anything. There have been some big moments in debates that you would think might register in the polls, and then but within a couple of weeks, it's all gone, and it's sort of back to where it was. One thing to note, though, is that some early state polls do show Mayor Pete Buttigieg up at the top, whereas the national polls show this Biden-Warren-Sanders race. And so if Pete Buttigieg is able to, say, win in Iowa, that could affect all the states that flow after that.
Finally, Tam, does either party want impeachment trial to last through the election season?
No. President Trump wants to be acquitted in the Senate as soon as humanly possible, and he's pretty frustrated that it's been held up, and it's not clear when that Senate trial is going to happen. And these Democrats, including Democrats in the Senate who are running for president, do not want to be trapped in the Senate chamber when they would rather be in Iowa campaigning. You're going to get this crazy February where it's Super Bowl Sunday, Iowa caucus Monday, and the State of the Union on Tuesday.
Tamara Keith, NPR's White House correspondent and co-host of NPR's Politics podcast. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
A move by Russia and China at the UN yesterday could put critical aid for millions of Syrians at risk.
For years, aid agencies have sent food and other aid to rebel areas over the objection of the Syrian government.
It's a program approved by the United Nations Security Council, but yesterday the backing for it broke down when Russia and China blocked a resolution to keep it going. We're joined now by NPR's Deb Amos to talk about this a little more. Deb, the UN Security Council has approved this cross-border operation every single year, right? What changed?
Boy, international aid groups were really surprised by the Russia and China veto. You know, they and the UN, they have been doing this for years. This is aid that goes across Syria's borders. There's two crossing points in Turkey, one in Iraq and one in Jordan, annually authorized at the UN. No news here. Mm. But this time, the Russians wanted to close two of those crossings, the one from Jordan and the one in Iraq. And the UN ambassador, Russia's, argued that the humanitarian situation in Syria has changed, that Syrian government forces with allies, Russia and Iran, have recaptured large parts of the country. And the ambassador said that the UN Security Council had to recognize that fact. And they want to cut the authorization time down to every 6 months because they say things are changing.
So is this actually the end of the aid program?
So the mandate for the program ends on January 10th. So there's still time to come up with a new resolution. But boy, does it seem like it is deadlocked. International aid groups say there is disaster ahead, especially now. The Russian Air Force and the Syrian Army have stepped up a military campaign to recapture northwest Syria. This is Idlib province. Overnight, 24,000 people were displaced in that province. And this is winter. Turkey has moved troops into northeast Syria, and that is also displacing civilians. So these are the border crossings that the Russians want closed. So here, Vanessa Jackson, she's with CARE. She was at the UN for the vote. CARE is one of the largest providers of aid in this cross-border program.
This is life-saving aid. People are going into a very harsh winter. We're seeing a really serious escalation in the bombing and shelling. So it is extremely serious. There is no plan B. We just can't afford to see a resolution not being agreed for 4 million civilians who were caught in the crossfire.
Deb, it seems like Russia and China are trying to push politics into this very delicate and dire humanitarian situation. What can these international organizations do if this deadlock continues?
That is what they're all talking about. And some of them are talking about going back to the old system before 2014. And that is when aid went across those borders surreptitiously. And they went into rebel-held areas because civilians were desperate and they needed the aid. This does put aid at risk. As the Syrian forces retake parts of this country, it will be a dangerous operation. The people who are delivering aid will be targets. So nobody really knows what to do.
We should say that this caught the Americans by surprise, right?
Yeah,
the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Kelly Craft, she's tweeted her anger. She's vowing that the U.N. Security Council will work every day between now and January 10th when the mandate expires to ensure that there is a renewal. But the question, I guess, is how much leverage does the United States have to get a new resolution through the Security Council right now?
You know, the Russians were signaling that the U.S. has very little leverage. Russia backed the Assad regime and eventually wants all of this aid to go through Damascus. This is a show of a return to full sovereignty over the country. Analysts say that Russia also wants cross-border aid operations closed from Iraq. Aid comes from there, but Syrians go out of there. Thousands have been fleeing into Iraq since Turkey took over parts of northern Syria. You know, this was a political vote. This is as much about politics as it is about humanitarian aid. The Russians are saying this is the end of the war, and our ally, Bashar al-Assad, won it. So get over it.
NPR's Deborah Amos, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today is expected to be the biggest shopping day of this year. The National Retail Federation says there's a huge jump in the number of people who shop the weekend before Christmas.
Yep, because everyone leaves it to the last minute like me. But are we shopping like we used to shop? Increasingly, Americans say they prefer giving and receiving gifts that are made ethically and sustainably. NPR's retail correspondent Alina Selyuk is here to tell us more. Alina, ethically and sustainably, I would love to know what those words mean to shoppers. Is this now mainstream?
People, I think, interpret it in very many ways. And depending on the survey, either way, over a course of multiple surveys, you can sort of start seeing this trend that people are saying they care about the values represented by the things they buy. For example, sustainability, fair trade is another one. This attitude, it's sort of like this interest in more virtuous consumerism, if you will.
It seems like an oxymoron a little bit.
Yeah, so but it's showing up in surveys. People are saying they want less packaging. They want reusable containers, recycled materials. This year, I've seen a lot of gift buying guides that are starting to reflect that. In super popular magazines and TV programs, you'll see things like metal straws or recycled wrapping paper. And not only are shoppers saying that they want to buy more sustainable products, for example, they're even willing to pay more for them. Two-thirds of shoppers said this in a recent survey by Deloitte. I talked with retail expert there, Rod Sides, and he said this spanned all age groups, but especially younger shoppers.
Gen Z, about 84% of the respondents said they are willing to pay more. Millennials is about 80%. We go all the way down to seniors. We find that regardless of the age cohort, it's above 50% who are willing to pay a little bit more.
Roughly a quarter of millennial and Gen Z shoppers said that they were willing to pay as much as 20% more.
So this seems like a good thing, and especially maybe even for companies, because they're saying they're actually willing to pay more. And this might be good for, obviously, retailers who are selling things, right?
The idea that people are willing to pay more is one of the biggest challenges there. But of course, to your point, like companies want to sell you more stuff, so they will also respond to what customers want. And so a lot of them are marketing ethics and sustainability of their products. This includes the historically environmentally friendly brands, think like REI or Patagonia, but also a new generation of sellers on Instagram and YouTube promoting refillable lipstick, reusable rubber cotton swabs, and ethically sourced handcrafted felt beds for cats.
And I'm on that, by the way.
I believe it. And even the giant conglomerates, if we go down that path, like Procter & Gamble and Unilever, are looking for ways to sell you maybe deodorant or shampoo in a container that you might return and refill. And to your point, if you think about it, there is a bit of a paradox here. Companies are pushing people to buy more stuff by saying it's better for the environment or local communities, when every single new item has to be manufactured, packaged, shipped, many of them flown on cargo planes, all these things that are inherently not better for the planet.
That's right. So how is this actually showing up in holiday shopping so far? What are we actually seeing?
Right. So the National Retail Federation says the top things they're buying this year are not surprising. It is clothes and toys.
Yep.
But there is an indication of how consumers are starting to veer away from buying stuff. A quarter of shoppers said they plan to gift experiences rather than things, like movie tickets or spa visits. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm giving anyone any ideas here.
Yep.
Among younger people, such experiences are more popular, planned by more than a third of shoppers. And in other surveys, these younger shoppers are also saying that they might be up for gifts from thrift stores, things that are used or resold, giving them a new life. On that note, just like on sustainable and virtuous shopping, just to point out again, it is a bit tricky to survey because it is one thing to say you're going to give your favorite person presents from a thrift shop. Or
yes, we say we're more virtuous.
Skip
but
that last minute shipping altogether. But it is another thing to actually do it.
That's right. We don't know if they are actually more virtuous. That's NPR's Alina Selyukh. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's Up First for Saturday, December 21, 2019. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Up First is back on Monday, of course, with news to start your day. And follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And of course, you know the news doesn't stop when this podcast ends. We've got a solution for that.
It's called Weekend Edition, Saturday and Sunday. Find it on your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
When Ellicott City, Maryland was hit with a deadly flash flood,
there's incredible amounts of rain in the Ellicott City area.
People thought it couldn't happen again. And then
Harris County 911, what's the location of your emergency?
It did.
God, this is worse than the last one.
And the reality of climate change pit neighbor against neighbor. Listen now to Embedded from NPR.
And just a reminder about donating before the end of the year to your NPR member station, which supports Up First. To get started with your donation to an NPR member station, visit donate.npr.org/upfirst or just text the word up to the number 49648. We'll send you a text message with a link where you can find your local station and make your contribution. Message and data rates may apply. You can visit npr.org/sms terms for privacy and text message terms.